Now are we good?
Sound check. One, two, three.
Hey, Lunatics, did you miss us?
Thanks to everyone who reached out and supported us. And Tori and I received an outpour of love and support. The follows, the subscriptions, those who watched, those who listened. I actually, Tori, received a couple of DMs from people that we went to school with that I haven't talked to in a while who said we inspired them to make sure that they're taking care of their mental health.
Oh,
and that's
that
exactly
so
what we wanted. I know. Yes. I'm so excited about that. And I'm just so grateful for the love and support that we have received in the launch of our first episode and on our journey for this podcast. And today I'm really excited because we're going to talk about our first content specific episode. And we talked about it last week. It's the mental health and relationships, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But before we jump into this episode, this is going to air afterwards. However, I did want to acknowledge that we're ending the National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And I just wanted to throw out there that those of you who have recovered from an eating disorder or are still currently struggling with one, do whatever you have to do, but keep going. And remember more than anything that you have the strength to keep going. And as I mentioned in the first episode, I also struggled with an eating disorder for a couple of years and still have those bad habits inside of me. And if you need peer support, like we mentioned in the first episode, our platform DMs are open and you're more than welcome to email us directly and DM our platforms directly.
Yes, and thank you again to everyone because your support and kind words really just fueled us. We were like, oh man, are we going to be able to do this? We can, and I loved hearing all of that. And speaking of the DMs, we do have a special segment today where we did get a DM from a listener, so we're excited for that.
Mm-hmm. Very excited. And I also wanted to take the time to acknowledge this episode is also going to come out afterwards, but Tori's birthday is coming up this week, so I wanted to wish Tori a happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm getting old. I love it.
Last year in your 20s, baby.
Oh, I'm going to throw up. Don't say that.
I know. Thinking about it is like so insane to me. I was literally, I feel like I was literally just wishing Mike a happy last year in his 20s, and now he's 32. maybe
so
31.
Hard.
Oh. Well, hard to keep track of.
My husband just turned 29 last week. We're only 8 days apart. This year, 9 days apart. But I'm just like, you're old. And I'm sitting there like, oh, I'm old. Like, awful.
Coming up, man. It's coming up.
Lena, you want to start off our first episode topic?
Yeah, and I don't even think I mentioned in the first episode that my husband's name is Mike. So his name is Mike, and I will refer to him as that, and my husband, and many other things, probably. But
nice.
I've been with Mike for 14 years, and as I mentioned in the first episode, once again, I have been dealing with my mental illness for 18 years, and Mike and I didn't live together for a very long time in the beginning of our relationship due to our ages. We were so young when we started our relationship. I was 14, and we have just over a 2.5 year age difference between us. So he truly had no idea how long I was struggling with my mental illness because I always felt that this is something I say so often, that these are my demons to fight, not his. So that's why I kept my mental health issues so confined in the beginning of our relationship because I didn't want him to battle my battles.
So when did he get a blind date with your demons then? Was it like later on in the relationship?
Yeah, it was much later on in the relationship, later than I even care to admit, actually. And Tori, you mentioned in the first episode you went through a really bad breakup with your now husband. And much like mm-hmm. you, I went through a really bad breakup early on in my relationship with Mike. And after that breakup, it's like so many insecurities that I never had before rose from the dead for me. And it just caused a spiraling effect with my mental health. So along with having an eating disorder and being obsessed with the number on the scale, I was obsessed with being extremely skinny, looking at myself. So the number on the scale plus looking at myself, I had to look extremely skinny. I had to be tan as all hell, and I tanned. It was not. So this was before you had to be 18 years old to tan. Mm-hmm. I had a tanning parlor right down the road from me, and I would go on my runs every morning, come back and tan, and you had to wait 24 hours. It's a law that you had to wait 24 hours to tan, and I waited 24 hours on the dot and went tanning every single day.
And I remember
disgusting.
That. Mm-hmm. You were so tan.
Disgustingly tan. Oh, it was gross. I'm glad I don't do that anymore. But if I didn't look tan, I didn't feel pretty. And then I was constantly getting my hair done, changing my hair color. I just thought I had to look the absolute best. And I don't know if it's because our breakup didn't really stem from that, from something like that, me and my looks. It stemmed from multiple things, but it just triggered a lot of the insecurities that I had deep within me. But at the same time that I had those insecurities, I was still thinking and holding this bad B mentality that was like, if he's going to leave me, especially looking like this, let him.
That is his loss. Like,
yeah, like I did all this.
I'm tanned. All I can think of is that episode on SpongeBob where they try to get really tan to look awesome. And I'm just picturing you like that. I don't know.
If I didn't stop tanning, I would have leather skin probably. It would be disgusting. So disgusting. And I'm also not even sure if I discussed my bipolar diagnosis in the first episode, but I am diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And when I received this diagnosis, my psychiatrist explained to me that the bipolar disorder usually doesn't present itself until one's late teen, early adulthood years. And for that, for me, for that diagnosis, that was so true. And like I mentioned, Mike is just over 2.5 years older than me. So when he turned 21, we drank pretty frequently, and it wasn't just a casual drinking. We got pretty turnt. However, we didn't drink. I would just drink wine and a lot of it. I built up a pretty strong tolerance to wine, and he would just drink beer. We weren't drinking hard liquor. It was none of that. We were just getting turnt off wine and beer, and I would black out and become really, really aggressive and start just spewing the worst possible things that I could say to Mike with 100% malintent behind it. And it was because he was in my line of fire, and you don't mix alcohol with bipolar, and I don't think you mix alcohol with any mental illness, especially untreated mental illnesses. And I was untreated at that point because I was not yet diagnosed. So he always was in my line of fire for anger, and he never knew why. He never knew what the real problem was for that. And I say I black out from the bipolar because when you black out from drinking, you barely remember everything. And I would remember every single thing I said the next day. I would go through it in my head, and then I would realize, oh my God, I would apologize. And bless his soul, he did forgive me each time. And I had to really take a step back and realize what I was doing to our relationship. And I had to direct that anger towards myself because I did not know. I did not understand what was happening. So I turned that anger on myself and realized, you know, what you're going through, the anger, the aggression that you have, is not an excuse to be an asshole to the person that you're in a relationship with. So that was like one thing he became really aware of, is that I would have that aggression, but I started turning that back towards myself, like I said. And then for a long time, he had no idea I had an eating disorder until I actually told him that I had an eating disorder. I remember for Valentine's Day one year, we went to our favorite local restaurant to eat, and I when we I ate my full meal, when we left, I pretended like the meal didn't agree with my stomach and that the grease was affecting me, and I asked him to stop at a gas station so that I could throw up the meal, because I did not want it in my system anymore. And some people carry good luck charms, crystals in their purse, and I carried all of those things and my lucky toothbrush to help me throw up, you know, trigger warning.
And here I am giggling, like, who am I?
And I am too. I am too. And the reason that I am fine with laughing at this is because if we have demons, we deserve to laugh at them, right? Mm-hmm.
I agree. We have to laugh with our demons or they take over.
Exactly. So I wasn't super open about my mental illness until more towards 2021, when I began suffering my complete mental breakdown. And once I realized how bad that was continuing to spiral, I sat down with Mike and we went through my diagnoses at the time. And his initial reaction wasn't super comforting. And my mention of the medications that I was on and getting on, he was scared of them changing me. And I knew exactly what he meant about that, and I don't blame him for being worried, but that wasn't the kind of reaction that I was hoping to receive. But again, I don't blame him for his lack of comforting response. Before me, he didn't actually have to deal with these things head on, so he truly didn't know any better. So I knew that I had to be patient with him and educate him on my illnesses,
yeah,
and just be more open with him, with my diagnoses, my appointments, and how those appointments were going. And the last time I self-harmed, it was on my upper legs, because I felt like I could hide that better than on my wrists, of course. And when Mike discovered that I was self-harming on my legs, it was a pretty scary moment for him. It was a very gruesome thing for him to see. And his first initial reaction, again, was not comforting. He was thinking it was all an act to end my life. So much like I explained in the first episode, I had to explain to him that it was not an act to end my life. It was an act to take the pain from my brain and put it towards a different part of my body so that it wouldn't be so overwhelming in my brain. And he had to take that in, and it made me promise to him that I wouldn't do it again. And if I felt like I needed to do it again, to talk to him about it. And now I do talk to him about it. And I don't know why I thought I could hide those marks from him. He sees me naked, for Christ's sakes.
He does? You're not the Virgin Mary?
No. Sometimes I wish I was. But I am so lucky and so blessed to have a spouse who has been patient with me and worked with me instead of against me all these years going through this battle with my mental illness, and he has not judged me one bit.
I love that. I mean, and I've known Mike for, I don't know, I mean, I don't know him, but, you know, I've known him for a while, and he's always seemed so laid back and easygoing. You know, I can see him, I can see the reactions. Like, I can see how he would react to all of that. And my husband, he kind of always knew that I had mental health issues. I don't know, maybe I give that vibe. I give this, like, I'm kind of crazy vibe. But we started dating when we were 17. We've been together for, it'll be 12 years in May. And we started off really strong, like, you know, those lovebirds in high school, and I was always coping with anxiety and depression without realizing it, and I noticed I was doing this when we graduated. He immediately moved in after graduation with me and my parents, and we made, like, an apartment pretty much in the upstairs of my parents' house, and we were 18, we were graduated from high school, we both had jobs, so we would be going out every weekend to a friend's house, and my mom never really said much. I mean, we paid rent, we had jobs, we lived there, you know, and I realized I was coping with the depression and the anxiety by going out every weekend, much like yourself, and we were getting belligerent. And it wasn't, again, it wasn't like hard liquor. I was out there with a Mike's Hard, or, you know, that great boxed wine, a little bit of Barefoot wine here and there if I was feeling rich. And got that sparkling rosé Barefoot.
You roll up with but, that you know, box. Like, I got that box wine, yes. Bitches. What is it,
Fraser? You yes. know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But, you know, he didn't really see much of my mental health struggles. I mean, he knew that I was an anxious person, but he didn't know the depth of me being an anxious person. And it all kind of culminated when we were planning our wedding. So at this point, we had moved out of my parents' home. We were living on our own, and we were planning this wedding. And if you've ever planned a wedding, it is so stressful. We had a guest list of almost 300, 350. We both come from really big families, and it was becoming heavy. And I remember,
that's exactly why I eloped in Vegas.
I wish I would have. We should have done that. And I had a call with one of my siblings, and I just remember it was a knockdown, drag-out fight with him. And I ended the call. I had a full-blown panic attack. I was on our kitchen floor sobbing. I could not catch my breath. He was angry. He thought my brother had said something to me, but I was just having this panic attack. And the fight with my brother, who was one of my very close siblings that I talk to almost every day, he thought he had said something to upset me, which he had, but it wasn't something that should have elicited that reaction. And I think that was the first time in our relationship he had seen me have a full-blown panic attack. And we had to have been together for about 4 years at that point and living together for three of those. So it was surprising that I was able to keep those hidden. And there have been many times in our 12 years now at this point that he's had to take me to the ER for a panic attack. We have this cute little thing that we call my depression nap. So if I'm getting really depressed or I'm getting really anxious, he will take our children and they'll go play outside. And he says, go take your depression nap. Now, that's aww. Not like how people would think, like, you're just bottoming out. He knows I need seclusion. I need quiet. I need to rest my eyes. I need to take a nap, maybe have a snack. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think is so important because he has zero mental health issues. That man can go through life like it's nothing. He's just going with the breeze. And I'm like, how? I'm so jealous. I wish I could have that. But I realized he's just like out there raw dog in life with no meds. How? I could never do that. But I think we would literally be in a psych ward with a grippy sock vacation. Yep. And, you know, I think in our household, we really like to treat mental health like a actual health issue. If you have a scraped knee, you put a Band-Aid on it. You have depression, take a sad depression nap. You know, you have to treat that like it's a wound. Your brain is an organ just like everything else in your body. You have heart disease, that's a disease. You have a mental health disease, it's still a disease. And I think our understanding of that in this house and in my family has really helped me, other than just the meds and the coping mechanisms and all that, because we treat it like it is an actual health issue. And he's no stranger to mental health issues. His family does have them, but they were a taboo, hidden subject. And we've come to realize as adults, oh, this is what it is, which I think happens to a lot of people our age.
Yep.
And he has always embraced me with so much understanding and grace. I need to get him something, like a pizza party. I don't know, something, because he has been amazing and I cannot thank him enough.
I love that for your relationship. I love that dynamic. And just like Ian, Mike is raw dogging life without any medications.
I don't know how to do it.
And he really doesn't have any like mental illnesses or anything like that in his brain, which is why he was so oblivious. Like, I don't want to say
yes.
Oblivious is the word, but it is. It is the word.
He was lost about it.
Yes, exactly. It wasn't like, oh my God, I've seen that before. I know exactly what this is. I know how to take care of this. And because he's never seen it or dealt with it head on, that's why I have to be, and I still, and to this day, very, very patient with him about, I'm changing medications all the time. That is just the cycle that you go through when you have multi-diagnosed psychiatric disorders. And that's, that's exactly what I have. And that's my, it's going to be the cycle for the rest of my life. So it's taking it step by step with your spouse, and just, I did it the wrong way in the beginning, and I had to change that. And at the same time that we have to take care of our own mental health, and I, you made so many great points about how to take care of your own mental health. I do depression apps too, and maybe that's not something that a lot of, that's not something that some other people do, but for me, that helps. For you, that helps you. So I love that dynamic there. And when we're taking care of our mental health, we still have to make sure that our spouse's mental health is being taken care of as well, whether we know for a fact that they don't suffer with actual mental health, like an actual diagnosis. Mike did go through a period of depression, and this was when I was going through my mental health issues. And so he went through that depression, and it stemmed from watching me go through my mental health issues and knowing there really wasn't much he could do about it except support me. And, you know, the support for, like, you can't, there's not a lot physically that you can do for somebody going through that. And so it just really, it really brought him down. And I didn't really know that until after, you know, I had spiraled so far. But for him to open up to me and tell me that, it made me realize, you know, I need to take more consideration in the way that I'm presenting myself during these moments and make sure he's okay too. And I realized Mike was burning himself out a little bit, and he's been working exclusively from home since 2020. He is the hardest working, one of the hardest working men I have ever met in my entire life. And he's a supervisor at his job, and he was clocking out for work physically and not mentally. And I know from my past jobs doing that, I did that in with multiple past jobs. And I know from doing that, that can have a long-term burnout effect on you for years, literally years. Yes. I'm still going through burnout moments from doing that. So I started noticing that he was burning himself out because he would never not go into work on time, but he was, and he has, you know, obviously on like paid time off, he never misses work, but he started going in a little bit later here and there. And that wasn't like him. Although I wanted him to do that, it wasn't like him. So I started realizing
something was off.
So I was sat down with him and I said, you're not clocking out mentally from your job because you're still answering emails. You're still looking at your team's chats and still answering their questions. So you're physically clocking out and still working. And I see that slowly burning you out. And if you don't change that now, it is going to have a lasting effect on you for a very long time. And it may cause you to have a mental illness because things like that can bring on mental illnesses. So
it can.
He realized it himself too, and I'm really glad that he did that. And he agreed to start taking a step back, getting away from his desk, or when he's at his desk, he won't check his emails because his desk is his place. He doesn't just work there. His video games and stuff, and where he, you know, he's got his friends that he plays video games with. So that's where he has a separate computer from his work computer on the side. So he can just move to the side when he's clocked out and just chat with his friends and stuff. So it's not really about getting away from his desk, but when it gets nicer out, we do take the dogs for walks and stuff too on our breaks. So that also really, really helps, especially with making him get away from that desk.
Oh yeah. I completely agree. I know just being outside for me helps. I have seasonal depression. I also, I don't know, have a late onset speech impediment. I don't know. But the, just going, just going outside sometimes, it's like, yes, I can feel that vitamin D giving me that vitamin S serotonin. That's not even a vitamin, but you know what I mean? And I would love to just be like, yep, I'm going to just go outside, soak up this vitamin D, and I'm a happy person. I would love to be able to do that.
Yep.
So I loved what you said about Mike and how you kind of urged him to start taking those breaks and get away from it, even though he's not getting away, but he's, you know, moving and having his own time. And I kind of resonated with that because Ian, my husband, he has on and off seasons at work. And a lot of times those off seasons are great. He's working strictly 7:30 to 4:30. He's home. You know, he's here in the mornings when the kids are getting ready and when I'm getting ready, and then he's here once we're done at work and school. But then we get to those busy seasons and they are sometimes 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. And that'll go on for the entire season, which working in agriculture, that's spring and fall. So we're actually approaching busy season right now. And I can tell there's like these little hints, like he's home at 5, he goes in at 6, you know, differences. And I remember one year was so bad. And he actually left for work at 4 a.m. and did not get home until 1 a.m. the next morning. And it was awful. I remember I was so anxious. I was like, come on, get home. And at the time we only had our oldest, and it was just really hard. Like, okay, when's he going to be home? And it's never a set hour. So, you know, I'll ask him throughout the day, hey, do you know what time you'll be home? Nope, I have no clue. We're super swamped, whatever. And it gets really tough. And we usually try to establish a routine, and it's the same routine every year. And he's been with this company for about 5 or 6 years now. But somehow, at the beginning of spring and fall busy season, we always forget the routine. And we have to try to, like, figure it out and jump back into it. And now that we have two kids, you know, it's a little bit more strenuous. But we really try to – we have phone calls with Daddy before bedtime. We have – you know, in the mornings when we're getting ready, if he is able to stay just a minute longer while the kids wake up, because they get up about 6:30 if he's not left yet, you know, he gets to say good morning to them and then leave. But I also have my parents. They live 3 houses down, and I'm so grateful for them because they will babysit the girls if I need to just have time with Ian. Or they will have dinner with me when he's gone, and it's weeks on end of, you know, no Ian, because it's really hard for the girls too, because they don't see their dad. I mean, he's gone in the morning when they wake up, and then he's home late and they're already in bed, and it's really tough. So one thing we try to do is we will do drives with Daddy, which is when we go to his work, we'll bring him lunch. Maybe he'll take them with him somewhere at work, you know, as long as it's safe. And he occasionally will have a time set on a weekend, like a Friday or Saturday, and he will let me come into work and I ride around in the truck with him, or I'll just hang out with him for half an hour, and it really helps when we can see each other, because we don't see each other for so long. And when I'm saying busy season, I'm meaning working 7 days a week. There's no weekends off, Sundays off, nothing. And it's hard. There's been seasons where he has worked 20, 30 days in a row with no time off. And we finally kind of figured out a way to combat this and to combat not speaking to each other or just texting. You know, we try to FaceTime. We, like I said, we have the nightly calls with the girls, which really help everybody involved, especially a mom at bedtime, because Lord, is that stressful. And another thing we do is I stay up. I will not go to bed until he gets home, if at all possible. You know, I might doze off, but I make sure I am awake when he gets there, because he needs that end of the day venting talk session. So we might go to bed at midnight, and that doesn't matter, because I was able to say, hey, how was work? Did you have a good day? And I think he needs that as everybody does, when you get home from work, you need to have some sort of conversation. And it really breaks up the monotony of him coming home, going to bed. We don't see each other. I might kiss him goodbye in the morning and then not see him for a week. And that's something that really helps us and eases the burden of being alone for 2 months, you know?
Mm-hmm. Tori, the routine that you've established with yourself and your relationship and your family during this busy season that Ian has is beyond incredible. I can take a lot away personally just from the things that you just told me that you do for your family and yourself. And I know that it had to probably take a long time leading up mm-hmm. and to it and figuring out what you guys had to do to make this work. And so many people are going to resonate with this, and this is going to, you know, paint, you know, a path for people. Mm-hmm. Everything you said, it just like relationship struggle, especially when it comes to jobs. And if you're not making time for each other, that's when things can hit the fan. Shit can hit the fan. Things can get rocky. And the fact that you guys have established this routine is just incredible to me. So props mm-hmm. to you for that.
Well, I mean, and it doesn't mean we don't fight. We always have what we call a busy season fight, which is when I think we're apart for so long and he's not home for so long. I'm like, I got to pick a fight. It's not enough.
Yeah. And when you mentioned that you're awake when he gets off work so that he can talk mm-hmm. to you about work, venting about work to somebody is so important. It doesn't mean, you know, that they're talking crap. They just need to get things off mm-hmm. their chest. And Mike and I do that all the time. We get things off our chest. We vent about work. And it's just the fact that you stay awake for him to let him do that mm-hmm. for you. And, you know, you in return, that's just amazing. I love that.
And I mean, we try. It's hard, but we try. But thank you. Thank you. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I did want to kind of go into our little special that I said we had today. We did have an anonymous email come in from a listener who heard what the topic of this episode was going to be about, and they wanted to share their story about what they're going through with their mental health and a relationship. And we're going to refer to this person as Tabitha. She was kind enough to let me call her and FaceTime her and have a discussion. And I will say, if you think it sounds a little weird, we have changed names and any personal identifiable information. So to keep this person's identity as safe as possible, which we'll do for anybody who emails mm-hmm. in and wants to do that. But we will go ahead and share that audio clip with you now. And if you are watching on YouTube, you'll see the questions posted during the interview. And if you're listening on any other platform, I will be reading those questions at the end of that interview.
So I've been with my husband 11 years now, separated for a year, but married 8 of them. So I don't really know. I guess when I moved away from my mother and relied more on him, but at the same time I still had friends, and we moved again further away, and I had nobody, and he wasn't there. I realized how much I relied on my friends to keep mm-hmm. me happy. So then we moved away and further away, and I had nobody, didn't know anybody. It was all new, and he was just constantly working. Mm-hmm. I had nobody. We never argued. We never fought, never raised our voices, but towards the end, when we did have our discussions about what was going to happen next, it was always I needed to go to therapy, and if he was needed after the fact, then he'd show up. I was already diagnosed with depression and anxiety prior to, and I had quit taking, because that's a whole another subject, but I'd stopped taking it because my doctor had me on so many medications that I didn't even know what I was taking anymore or why I was taking them. So I quit, and I felt like I was fine, but I guess I didn't realize the hole that I was going into, and nor did he. I don't know how other people think. I only know how I think. I just know he constantly says he doesn't have time to miss me. He's too busy. But he is busy. There's so many other factors. He is busy, but simple text wouldn't do. If I was healed completely from my last relationship, probably not. No, I jumped into it too quickly. He hadn't even proposed to me yet, and I was wondering what was going to happen when we broke up, and then I got proposed to.
So that was my first time listening to that. So these are real reactions from getting to listen to that for the first time. And what you said about what you do with your relationship and your routine and stuff, I think that going into that interview really, you know, it paved the way right there, because mm-hmm. there's many things, you know, that could have been done to save that. You know, she mentioned that she felt like he had more time to talk mm-hmm. to her, and at least a text message, you know, and what you said you do in your relationship, it just, I think that's going to be extremely helpful, especially for our lunatics to hear, you know, a side of a relationship that they might be going through, and hear mm-hmm. how you and I have put those things together and really moved forward with our relationships. And we've been in long-term relationships. And one thing that really struck me is that she mentioned getting off her medications, and she was on a lot of different medications, and it sounded like she probably got a new doctor that was like, wow, why are you mm-hmm. on these medications? And that has happened to me so many times in my journey. And I really feel for her there, because it mm-hmm. is so hard. You get diagnosed with something from multiple different specialists, health professionals, and then you get to another one and they're like, oh, wow, I don't know why you were diagnosed this. I don't know why you were put on this. Mm-hmm. So you have to go through that whole cycle of changing medications. And I did the same thing as her. I stopped taking medications completely throughout my 18 years several times. I was like, oh, I mm-hmm. don't need them then. You know what, if you don't think I should be on them, don't put me on any right now. I'm golden. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just raw dog it because I feel like it's right. And every single time I spiraled. So I know personally, yeah. I'm not somebody that can go unmedicated for my diagnoses. So, mm-hmm. And she mentioned saying that she felt like things were fine. And you do feel like things are fine for quite some time. And then people start to realize outside of you first, things aren't fine. And then you start to realize things aren't fine. And that's when the cycle starts over again. And it's such a hard cycle to go through, and especially in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I did discuss with this listener was if she had stayed on those meds, could anything have changed? And short answer was no. And I want that to be something that our listeners and our viewers can kind of cling to, that, hey, if it's not going to work, it's not going to work. And you can't damage yourself and others to force something that just shouldn't be. And that's something I really took from that interview with them. Now, for the people that are not watching us and that are just listening, I am going to go ahead and review the questions that were asked to our anonymous listener Tabitha. I had spoken with her, and we spoke about when she first noticed her mental health playing a role in that relationship. And then we spoke about how her partner responded to and handled those symptoms and those diagnoses. Then we spoke about what she thought she could have done different, what he could have done different. And that was hard. That was the hard part of that interview, where there was a lot of realization there. And that's something I want our listeners to understand. There's going to be things that could be changed. There's nothing that you can say, well, I did everything perfectly. Well, nobody is perfect. There's got to be things that could have been changed. And the last thing we discussed was knowing what she knows now and knowing about the relationship and her mental health, would she go into it again? And that was a no. It was. And I think it was very cleansing for her as well to get those thoughts out and to understand, you know, it happened, it's over, moving on.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I think I'm so glad that we got to enter that into this a segment in this episode. And I think mm-hmm. it's important for people to see that side of the relationship and what you can take, what steps you can take to make it better. And also you mentioned, you know, medication's not working. That's why I went to so many different mental health professionals, mm-hmm. because you know when something is and isn't working for you. Don't yes. just stay on something because somebody's telling you it should be mm-hmm. working. If it's not working, get off of it and don't give up. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. I think I am a good example of if you just keep going, you will get somebody who cares and will yes. prescribe you and diagnose you correctly.
Yes, I completely agree. You are really a good example for them. That's not a bad thing. You are showing people that, hey, you're not going to get a great doctor first time around.
No, it may take many years and several doctors mm-hmm. and it sucks. And hopefully we can get better with that, but it's going to take a while for us to get to a different point from there. But mm-hmm. just you mentioned several times, mental health is health, so it's got to be taken just as seriously as physical health. And if you mm-hmm. don't take it seriously, you're going to spiral, you're going to go off the deep end, and do whatever you do to treat your mental health issues. And mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be medications. If medications don't work for you, do whatever you got to do, but at least do it, you know?
Yes, I agree. I agree completely. And I know that we have some feelings on this that are very similar, mm-hmm. but you have to take care of yourself.
Yes. And I'm going to go off on a tangent here probably, and that's okay, because like you said, we feel the same way about these things. But I want to mention holding on to that. We're trying to get away from the stigma on mental health, you know, and if you play a victim to your life and your mental illnesses, you're going to keep the stigma that we're trying so hard to get away from. And depression and anxiety are excruciating, debilitating, and not a single person should tell you otherwise, but those mm-hmm. illnesses do not define who you are. At the end of the day, if you choose to live your life with a mental illness that and you go untreated and you're not doing anything to try to fix it, do not use your friends, your significant other, whoever's closest to you in your life as a punching bag, because you are struggling and you're not mm-hmm. taking the time to do something about your mental illness, whether it's seeking professional help or taking care of it naturally. Do whatever you got to do, but don't use somebody else as a punching bag or let them be in your line of fire because you're struggling. Mm-hmm. And I know I did say in the first episode that it is okay to let things be effing shitty. And it is okay to let things be effing shitty. And you can do that for, you know, however long you need to. But at some point you have to take a step back and realize that if you have the ability to change something that is effing shitty in your life, you have to take the accountability. You have to take yes. steps to change them. Otherwise, you are still playing victim to your life mm-hmm. and your demons. And even if you're choosing to wake up every single day just to survive because you feel like you have to, do more to make your life worth surviving so eventually you can make a life worth living for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And no, what I'm saying is not simple at all. I know this for a fact. So many of you know this. I'm not saying this is easy, but there are things, small, very small steps that you can take every single day to make a difference in the long run. And I'm not going to go through those examples because not everybody's situation is the same as yours. And that's important to know as well, is that not every situation is the same as yours. But I can guarantee you that whatever shitty situation you're going through right now will not matter in 2 to 3 years from now, because whatever shitty situation I was going through 2 to 3 years ago does not matter right now. And it may not even matter by next week. And I hate the saying, keep rolling with the punches, because you do not have to do that. Fight the F back. Take control and fight the F back. Know your worth when it comes to your relationships and treat your life like a relationship too. I'm not saying that you have to worship yourself. You have to think that you're a goddess by any means or a god, because that is hard to do. And I don't even think that about myself, but figure out what you can do, what you can take control of, and also take accountability, especially if people are bringing things to your attention. Take accountability and figure out how to fix it.
Yes, accountability is such a big thing. You cannot go through life saying, well, I did that because I have X, Y, and Z. That is an excuse. You cannot do that. You can use it as an explanation while taking accountability. Like, hey, I know I did this. You know, sometimes that can happen because I have X, Y, and Z, but I apologize and I take responsibility. And I think that's a really big, big takeaway, is you have to be accountable.
And I think you should, people should live their lives like they're creating a legacy. And, you know, and that is a huge thing. You're not actually creating this celebrity legacy, but think about it like you are, because at the end of the day, your tombstone, when you pass away, is not going to say so-and-so suffered from depression and bipolar. My tombstone, I hope to the whatever lords are out there in this world, and the higher-ups, I hope to the higher-ups, my tombstone says something like, definitely not, oh, this one was diagnosed with bipolar. She's crazy. It's going to say, I fell into a tiger's lair and I fell into a tiger's lair going to bat for my corn dog because F that tiger, I was hungry. Okay? That's my legacy. Not that I have bipolar.
I love that. Yeah, and I have always said, and I know you've said this too, you know, you've said you wanted to be cremated, and I love that you're like, I don't care how old I am. I already know what I want. I also would like something special. I want my remains to be scattered, but I don't want to be cremated.
Makes sense.
Leave my arm on a beach. Leave my arm on a beach with a drink in its hand. Okay.
Or maybe in a shark's mouth.
I want that.
And pretend like you got bit by a shark. That's your legacy.
That's my legacy. You're not going to find a tombstone because I am everywhere.
Everywhere.
Now, to kind of lighten the mood after talking about that, I did want to talk about this article that you actually sent up from Psychology Today, and it's about taking care of yourself, and this link will be in the show notes, but I wanted to just kind of talk about some key points in that article that I enjoyed, and it was just taking care of your physical needs. You need to eat, you need to sleep, and you need to take a damn shower. I know that sometimes, and I've done it myself, you get in this depressive mode. You don't want to move. You don't want to get up. That is just such a burden. Get up and wash your ass, okay? It is not.
Well, I've always
you just got to do it.
I've always also said, if you can't take a shower, wash your damn face. Your face is going to be the most important thing. Wash your damn face.
And you know what? One thing I love to do, I have a depression nap. I have a depression shower. I'm going to play Celine Dion on my Bluetooth speaker, and I'm going to ball, and I'm going to scrub. I got my loofah. I am like a sitcom singing in the shower, and I feel so much better. And you have to thank people, too. You have to thank people. You can't just go around not accepting the grace and how people have helped you. You have to appreciate it. And I think simply appreciating things is going to help you. You're going to be like, you know what, man, that person did that for me. I must be worth mm-hmm. something. And that was something I really took from that article as well. And the last thing was to just be a snail. We are not in a race. We're not in a marathon, no competition, nothing. You're just getting through life. Do it in your own time. We cannot schedule our mental health issues. We don't know, oh, I'm going to have a panic attack on Friday. We don't know that. So you have to understand, take it at your own pace.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. And I'm going to end the show with the same statement that I'll be ending the show with every single time. If you've survived another day at war with your brain, you are superior, and we're wishing you nothing but peace in your soul, your mind, and another day of surviving until you can find your way of living.
And we will see all of you lunatics in 2 weeks on Trigger Warning Podcast.